All right. Back a while ago, we had part one, Jesus grew in grace. We were looking at the doctrine of the humanity of Christ and seeing what it actually means, what it actually teaches, and how it affects us. And we see that he grew in grace. And this was, as it first came to me, was the most hard to grasp, that I could only think of Christ as full of the grace of God. And yet, in his humanity, he grew in that grace, in that fellowship relationship. And Luke 2, 40 and 52, the child grew, waxed strong in spirit, filled with wisdom. The grace of God was upon him. And verse 52, and Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God. The word favor there is actually grace. He increased in grace with God and man. He grew intellectually, physically, spiritually, and then socially. The four areas of our development that we should follow Christ. All right, with that then, I bring you to point two. Point one was last time I spoke on this. We come now to point two, Jesus increased in grace, this very thing that I was emphasizing. Look with me at Hebrews 5, 7 to 9, who in the days of his flesh, when he had offered up prayers and supplications with strong crying and tears unto him that was able to save him from death, and was heard in that he feared, and the King James margin here says this feared may refer to his fear of God, meaning for his piety, though he were a son, yet learned he obedience by the things which he suffered. And being made perfect, that's just mind-boggling to me, his obedience made him perfect. He became the author of eternal salvation unto all them that obey him. Let's look at this passage for a little bit. First of all, the focus on his human nature in the days of his flesh, when he had offered up prayers and supplications with strong crying and tears. So let's make no mistake, this was in his humanity, feeling, sensing deeply his humanity when this happened. Then the contrast to his deity, though he were a son. That'll be the next one there, okay? There we go. Contrast to his deity, though he were a son. So John 5, 18, there's no mistake here. He's in his humanity, but he is still deity. John 5, 18, therefore the Jews sought the more to kill him because he not only had broken the Sabbath in their rules, but said also that God was his Father, making himself equal with God. They understood what he meant, and they were going to stone him for blasphemy. Point C here, the focus on his Garden of Gethsemane experience. Garden of Gethsemane experience. This was the strong crying and tears. He wept often, but this was the Garden of Gethsemane experience. We see his emotional distress. It's mentioned in Hebrews 5, 7, the first part of what we were reading. Strong crying and tears unto him that was able to save him from death. I've mentioned before that this death that he was praying about was not his physical death. For that he was already resigned to do it. But I think was the spiritual death, if I dare say that, when he received the sins of all of us, all of our filthy thoughts and deeds and actions and so on, and paid the penalty on the cross for that. Let's look at Matthew 26, 36 to 38. Then cometh Jesus with them unto a place called Gethsemane, and saith unto the disciples, sit ye here while I go and pray yonder. He didn't ask them to listen to his prayer. This was very personal. But he wanted them to pray with him and for him. He took with him Peter and two sons of Zebedee and began to be sorrowful and very heavy. Then said he unto them, My soul is exceeding sorrowful, even unto death. Tarry ye here and watch with me. Keep watch. Keep on the alert. Pray. Mark 14:33, He taketh with him Peter and James and John, began to be sore amazed and to be very heavy. Amazed here means to be alarmed thoroughly, to be terrified. This was a thing approaching him of receiving the penalty of sin in his own life. And it was alarming, it was terrifying. Very heavy indicates intense discomfort. Something this eternal being had never felt, had never experienced, was going to happen to him now. And he was not looking forward to that part of it. Luke 22:43-44. There appeared unto him an angel, unto him from heaven, strengthening him. And being in an agony, he prayed more earnestly. And his sweat were, as it were, great drops of blood falling down to the ground. This word agony is a strong mental struggle for victory. It's trying to get the victory, but so much so that it forced blood through his skin. Adam Clark says, There appeared unto him an angel from heaven, strengthening him. All the examples, medical examples that I have read of, people have researched, people did bleed through the skin, but they also died. What was causing that was usually physical trauma, or they were hung upside down and beaten and stuff like that. And they died. So here, the angel, being in agony, his sweat was like great drops of blood falling to the ground. How exquisite must this anguish have been when it forced the very blood through the coats of the veins and enlarged the pores in such a preternatural, it's another word for supernatural, manner as to cause them to empty it out in large successive drops. Bloody sweats are mentioned by many authors, but none was ever such as this, where a person in perfect health, having never had any predisposing sickness to induce a debility of the system, and in full vigor of life, about 33 years of age, suddenly, through mental pressure, without any fear of death, sweat great drops of blood. These continued during his wrestling with God to fall to the ground. He stained the ground with his blood before his skin had been pierced. Then we see also his dependent cry to God. And this says he had offered up prayers and supplications. Matthew tells us about this in verses 39, 42, and 44. He went a little farther, and fell upon his face and prayed, saying, Oh, my Father, if it be possible, let this cup. You remember the cup we talked about is where the sin is collected in God's cup. And then at the time of justice, that is poured back on the person. Well, this cup was the cup of all of our sin to be poured upon him. Let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt. Verse 42, he went again the second time and prayed, saying, Oh, my Father, if this cup may not pass from me except I drink it, thy will be done. And then 44, because he wanted the sins taken care of. So if it doesn't pass except I drink it, then thy will be done. And then 44, and he left them and went away again and prayed the third time, saying the same words. So pouring his heart out to God. In Mark 14, several verses here, verse 35, he went forward a little, fell on the ground, prayed that if it were possible, the hour might pass from him. And he said, Abba, Father, that's in the Aramaic and in the Greek, all things are possible unto thee. Take away this cup from me. Nevertheless, not what I will, but what thou wilt. 39, and again he went away and prayed and spake the same words. 41, he cometh a third time and saith unto them, Sleep on now, take your rest, it is enough, the hour is come. Behold, the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. And then again in Luke 22:41-42, he was withdrawn from them about a stone's cast, and kneeled down and prayed, saying, Father, if thou be willing, remove. The King James margin says here, willing, remove. If you are willing to remove, it could be translated. If you are willing to remove this cup from me, nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. So something that he was terrified of, something that left him amazed, a bit confused about it all, very heavy, deep emotional. Yet, he said, even this I'm willing, if that's your will. I want you to see in this as well his sense of loneliness. The fact that he was the Son of God and knew it. The fact that he was that close to Christ, to God the Father. Still, in his humanity, he was lonely in this most desperate of his times. Matthew 26:40-41, he cometh unto the disciples and findeth them asleep and saith unto Peter, what? Could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray that you enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. That was sort of the summary of Peter. Yes, yes, I'll do it. I'll be everything for you. Yes, yes, yes. And then he betrays him 3 times. So the spirit was willing, but the flesh was weak. Mark 14:37-38. And he cometh and findeth them sleeping, saith unto Peter, Simon, sleepest thou? Couldest thou now watch 1 hour? Watch ye and pray, lest you enter into temptation. The spirit truly is ready, but the flesh is weak. And Luke 22:46, he says unto him, why sleep ye? Rise and pray, lest you enter into temptation. And they all did. Then the learning of his obedience. This is that remarkable concept. He never had to obey. He willingly obeyed Father and Spirit. They were, it was the loving relationship that, how can I help? What can I do? And the spirit of obedience is there, a part of love. But it was never like this. It was not like, I command and you obey. See? He learned this. Hebrews 5:7-9. And was heard in that he feared, or that he was heard in that he had his piety, his holiness. Though he were a son, yet learned he obedience by the things which he suffered. And being made perfect, he became the author of eternal salvation unto all them that obey him. So Christ's obedience was not automatic. Let's grasp this idea that in his humanity, he didn't just sail along. No temptations or anything. He had the temptations, and his obedience was not automatic. His struggle, granted, was not like ours against sin or striving to believe God, but his struggle was in his human nature that was clearly given to normal fleshly weaknesses. There were certain things that would terrify even this, the Son of God. Gethsemane showed his fear of such a coming suffering. Someone has mentioned about the pure Gulf waters and looking at the place where the great muddy river, Mississippi, comes down and just disgorges into that pure clear water, and you see this mud, filth pouring into the crystal clear water, and they said it was almost a sickening thing to see it. And then the preacher was pointing out that this was what was happening on the cross, a crystal clear conscience, crystal clear soul, a sinless being, and suddenly the rush of all of our sin, all of the sin of mankind from the beginning and to the end, all poured into him, and he was taking care of it. The Geneva Bible notes, these do not only show that Christ was true man, but also other things which the godly have to consider of, in which the secret of the redemption of all mankind is contained in the Son of God when he debased himself to the state of a servant. Such things as these no man can sufficiently declare. It's too deep, it's too amazing. And then fifthly, his victory through grace. He was heard in that he feared, or for his piety. The words, not as I will, but as thou wilt, were words of victory over his human nature's fears and weaknesses. This is where you and I get our victory, not in triumph and physical power or giant will, but just by yielding I bow to what you want, you see. He chose to do God's will. Now quickly, let's apply the truth to us. We are also dependent on God's grace for empowerment in salvation and Christian growth. The word salvation does not just mean making the decision to trust Christ. That's the beginning of it. That's how our salvation begins. It's how it becomes legal for God to take us to himself. But salvation is also our entire battle against sin in this life. And then it is concluded by his taking our body up, changing it to an eternal body, an everlasting body, for our life in heaven. So his grace empowers it all. B, we need to avoid taking the paths that drain away God's grace. God's grace is the empowerment to do these things, but there are activities we can get into that will drain God's grace. We've talked about those, the root sins that are bitterness, immorality, and the profane lifestyle, living for the moment, living for what we can get rather than waiting for God. Then seeking salvation and Christian growth by law-keeping, that also takes us away from the grace of God. Galatians 5:4 tells us this, Christ has become of no effect unto you, whosoever you are justified or think you're justified by the law. You are fallen from grace. Grace is the only pure path to receive this entire area of salvation. You're trying to do it yourself, you have no hope. And then we need to choose obedience to please God, not for law keeping. Not to put a gold star on our chart, not to put a check mark by that work we wanted to do. Why do you do what you do? And if it's not the love of God, then it's a wrong motive. D, we need to welcome every challenge in life as an opportunity to grow in Christ. It's really hard to welcome trials. It doesn't seem like it'll be a trial if I can welcome it. Count it all joy, James says. But this is the joy of saying, I have another wrestling match. I'm going to try my hardest to beat the opponent. Boxing match. Other team sports. Judo match. They don't call it a match, but anyway, a fight. But you anticipate it. You've prepared for it. And now rejoice that you can test your ability to do it. James 1, 2, and 3, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations or trials, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. You build yourself up. I was watching a boxing match last night on YouTube, and they were saying, now both of these guys are very strong, very powerful, but this one fellow hasn't had a match for months. They said that you can work out in the gym all you want, but it's in the battle that you hone the reflexes, where you move just enough that the guy's blow just glances your head instead of shocking it into unconsciousness. And then let me close with this thought. We need, when these trials come, we need to welcome every challenge in life as an opportunity to grow. No, I'm sorry. We need to embrace the path of growth. This is the thing. We're not going to be happy with the fact that we have a trial, but we need to embrace the path of growth. Let us then not give ourselves to despair, to anger, woe is me, poor me, but I'm given another chance to grow, to develop. So James 1:4. But let patience, this thing that you gain by getting through your trial, let patience have her perfect work. In other words, cooperate with it, that you may be perfect and entire, wanting, lacking nothing. The idea is this is how you will grow. This is the entire focus of your life now. Your salvation for justification is past. Now you're in sanctification. You're learning to be holy. Let me close with 1 Peter 2, 20 to 23. Peter says, "For what glory is it if when you be buffeted for your faults, you take it patiently?" You know, you deserve it. You should be taking it patiently, even though you don't like it. "But if when you do well and suffer for it, you take it patiently, this is acceptable," or thank, "with God. For even hereunto," we were called unto this, he says, "even hereunto were you called." And how do we know this? "Because Christ also suffered for us." The King James margin here says some of the manuscripts read "for you," but one he's including himself and the other not. "Leaving us an example that ye should follow his steps." So he did no sin, neither was guile, deceit, falsity found in his mouth, who when he was reviled, reviled not back again. When he suffered, he threatened not. And he had the ability to threaten, but he didn't. "But committed himself," or his cause, "to him that judgeth righteously." God, you take care of this in your own time. So let us learn from the weakness of Christ's humanity. We could learn from the strength of his humanity, but here also the concept of his weakness, that time, especially in the garden, that Hebrews focuses upon. Strong crying in tears, terrified in an agony, and yet victorious at the end.